Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And we're joined now by Billy Kelleher, Fianna Fáil MEP for Ireland South. Billy, you're not elected yet, but it is looking, from what we hear, as though it's good news for you in Ireland South.
Yes, Claire, it seems to be, if you're looking at the bundles on the tables as they're being counted and piled up, it looks that I'll be in a reasonably good position after the first count. Sean Kelly, it looks like, will have a surplus, how much we are not sure yet. And then, obviously, that will have to be distributed, which will take some time because all papers will have to be counted from Sean Kelly's first preference. So that will take us well into late tonight here in Cork.
So first count expected when, do you think?
Around 4 o'clock, first count, and then if there's a surplus, that distribution will probably take right through to the night.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was a very tight vote management, wasn't there, by Fianna Fáil there, where you are in Ireland South. You were canvassing in Cork, Kerry, Limerick, West, and nowhere else, is that right? Because Cynthia Niavoracu had the rest of it.
Yes, I mean, the party took a decision. Look, I've been a director of elections previously for Fianna Fáil, so I mean, I always knew there had to be a second candidate. We want a second candidate that would be strong, that would bring something additional. Cynthia Niavoracu was, selected for that purpose, and she's performed exceptionally well. I mean, it is a difficulty to divide a vote that may not necessarily be fully there. I mean, if you were running at 45% in the polls, well, then clearly you would divide and you'd have two seats. But, we're not at 40%, so it's always going to be difficult to get two seats. Mm-hmm. But where she's positioned, she's ahead of the chasing pack, and she's done exceptionally well. So we are in with a definite chance of a second seat there.
But I'm sure there were points in the campaign where you were concerned that that strategy would go against you.
Well, look, as a candidate, Claire, you're always concerned because, I mean, you're looking at the fact that, you know, if you're polling around 22 or 23%, dividing that in two in a five-seater doesn't leave much room for slippage from your own perspective. So the purpose really is to try and maximise the vote in your own area and hope that the other candidate can do it in their area, and that then after that, if you're near the quota, well, you're safe. But if you're not, well, then very quickly you could be dragged into a fight in terms of waiting for transfers from other candidates that are being eliminated.
And listen, looking ahead then, you could soon have an EU commissioner from Fianna Fáil and from Cork in the shape of Michael McGrath.
Well, I wasn't aware that decision had been made. Micheál Martin obviously will be the one that will be making that decision from the point of view. The government is appointing somebody. It is Fianna Fáil's prerogative in terms of appointing a commissioner. So I would be very confident that Micheál will select somebody of credibility and ability, and that will do Ireland proud in the European Commission.
And you'd reckon it'd be Michael McGrath, don't you?
I honestly don't know, Claire, being truthful. I don't, it's a truth of the matter. I mean, there would be many things that would have been taken into account in terms of appointing a commissioner. Firstly, whether or not the person you're mentioning wants it. And secondly, whether that would be in the interest of the stability of governments. All of these things would have to come into play. Mm-hmm. But look, that is a decision for another day down the road to a certain extent.
Okay, now, if that were to happen, and then if Fianna Fáil get three people elected to the European Parliament, you'd hardly want to face a series of by-elections, would you?
Well, I mean, if I was to advise the government, and it's not for me to advise, but I mean, I certainly would be thinking that if there's by-elections to be filled, they should fill them quickly rather than waiting, and let the electorate decide in those various constituencies.
Have the by-elections as opposed to a general?
No, have the by-elections very quickly. I mean, the seats will be filled in the next couple of days from the European elections. Then there'll be resignations from Dáil Éireann by the candidates that will be elected. And I would be thinking that by-elections as quickly as possible would be the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. For a number of reasons. Number one, it gives the electorate in those constituencies the entitlement to have full representation in Dáil Éireann. But equally, it takes away the continuing narrative around, you know, when will the by-elections be held, when will the by-elections be held. The most important thing I've learned in this election and over the last number of years is people want stability. They like to know that a government can govern, that it can make decisions. They may not always like the decisions, but they do want stability. And that's why in this particular election, well, I think there was that move back towards the centre around ensuring that parties that were supported and elected both at locally and the European level were centrist parties. They like stability because they know that stability and centrist policies work.
How quickly, though, could those by-elections be held? Because isn't it the case that you don't give up your Dáil seat until you're actually sitting in the Parliament, and that would be July?
Yes, you resign when you take up the seat in the Parliament. So the new Parliament will be reconvened in a plenary session in, I think, the 15th or 16th of July. Mm-hmm. So then you could have by-elections in September.
Or you could have a general election in October.
But the Micheál Martin, the leader of Fianna Fáil, has said he wants to go until the end of the mandate or the end of the term. And the Taoiseach, more importantly, who is the person whose prerogative it is to call an election, said that he also wants this to serve out its full term.
So and do you agree with that, personally?
Well, again, I'm not advising, but...
I know, but you have an opinion.
It is high risk to go to the end, but equally, sometimes the public have also very much chastened parties that went for a snap election because they were seen to be opportunistic and taking advantage of weakness in opposition and other things. So, by and large, I look at it from Bertie Ahern's point of view. He always said, go the full term, you know the date, you prepare for it, and you work towards that. I think people want stability.
I'm not sure Bertie Ahern is saying that about this situation right now. I think he would be in favour,
yes,
he was saying over the weekend, of going now if it were up to him.
Well, he did say for many, many years, and I do always observe his astuteness around electoral issues, and he was always of the view, to go for as long as possible. The difficulty here, of course, is that, you know, it's either September, October, or else you're into February, because November elections, by and large, are drudgery, just like February elections are. So are you going to have the drudgery in November, December, or January, February? There isn't much difference at that stage.
Mm-hmm. All right, Billy, we'll let you get back to the
Thank
count
you very
there
much.
And the long wait ahead. So that's interesting, isn't it, that Billy Kelleher doesn't really see the wisdom in going early with a general election. I don't know why. If he's listening to Bertie Ahern, you would have expected him to say otherwise. Clearly he thinks it's worth staying the distance.
Well, Gary, a very astute observer to my right, Dr. Reedy, said last night on the television that there was no advantage to going the full term, and I would agree with that. It would seem utterly pointless to, after having a budget, then to wait for three whole months, or even four whole months, and people just generally in sour humour for that January brings by its very nature, where you could go in late October, weather still should be reasonably well, a bit of daylight still, and the term is practically up. I mean, what would be the point in waiting?
Teresa? I mean, you have a budget in September, mid September.
Yeah, you could bring it forward, couldn't you?
You can bring it forward. I mean, the timing of the budget is within the gift of the government, and the financial situation is very rosy. There's every reason to believe that the government can continue to, provide generous packages to the voters. There's also the fact that, you know, Sinn Féin are now regrouping. So why would a government with control over election timing give them more time to analyse what's gone wrong, regroup, present a different strategy? So strategically, in terms of the party competition, it doesn't make any sense to give them the extra time. You'd have to run the by-elections. Those are uncertain. Governments always struggle to win by-elections, and then you'd lose some of this momentum. And I think we want to be careful about overstating the momentum that the government parties have. I mean, they've both lost seats here. It's just that we thought it was going to be a much worse day. So the momentum they have is modest. So allowing the by-elections to go ahead potentially risks eroding some of that. And I think the timing question is very open. And I mean, I do see what Billy Kelleher is talking about, but if you run it in the end of October or the first week of November, the clocks haven't gone back. You have that extra bit of daylight. It is a bit more pleasant than doing it on the other side, where you're really doing all the active campaigning in January and February.
I have Holly Kearns with us now, leader of the Social Democrats and TD for Cork South West. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you very much for joining us. So you have big gains for your party at local level in Dublin, in Wicklow, Kildare. What message are you taking from that this morning?
Yeah, it's a hugely positive time for the party. There's obviously still some counts going on, so we're hopeful for more gains. But overall, it looks like we're likely to almost double our seats from 2019. For places like Kildare, we doubled our seats almost from 4 to 7. We doubled the number of seats in Galway City, Limerick City, tripled our seats in Cork County, and amazing gains in Wicklow as well. And then, of course, the huge achievement of our seats on Dublin City Council, where we'll be the second largest party representing that area.
So, okay, so you're currently at 32, is that right, nationwide?
I think that's the latest figure.
Okay, and what's the ambition there then by the end of the count?
I mean, we're delighted with where we are at the moment, Claire. We've gone from 19 in the last election to that. But of course, with the last few counts kind of finishing up, we'd be hopeful. There's a few of our candidates still in contention, but with transfers, it's so hard to predict what way these things are going to go. We're all heads in spreadsheets, obviously, but, but just have to wait and see.
I mean, the national polls have had you at around 5 to 6% for the last 3 years or so. But just looking at where you are this morning in these elections, it's 3.5%. Does that concern you?
To be honest, it doesn't. Like, when we're, you know, doing polls around the country, that's, you know, presuming there's candidates in every single part of the country, and as a growing party, we're not there yet. So we're really, really happy to have potentially doubled our seats. And then there's so many areas, Claire, where we stood candidates that, like, narrowly missed out. Areas we wouldn't have contested before, like in Clare, we had Hilary Tong and Fiona Levy, I think, missing out by 50 and 60 votes. We stood candidates in Kerry for the first time who did incredibly well. So we're building all over the country. And to be honest, it feels like a really, really positive time for the party. And we're so proud of the campaigns that our candidates have run.
Yeah, I'm sure you're disappointed, though, that your own seat in Bantry, which played a role, of course, in propelling you onto the national stage, that's gone.
I know. And yeah, that's, of course, that was my first ever election in 2019. And I mean, to say I scraped in, I lost by one vote, called a recount and won by one vote. It's an incredibly competitive area. It's four seats and there's a lot of new candidates to the race this time. So I am actually quite happy with the vote that we held in that area. Of course, we're gutted we didn't get the seat like you always would be. But we have doubled our representation in my constituency. We have Isabel Tous elected in Skibbereen Clonakilty and Anne Banbury elected in Bandon Kinsale, and in early on in the counts as well. So for us, it feels really momentous to have made those kinds of gains in Cork South West, to have started so recently from nowhere and be there now is great.
On the European stage then, no big breakthrough expected there in these elections. So the Soc Dems, you're not aligned with any of the big groupings, you've no affiliation there. And I suppose you could say then that people don't know what they're going to get if they vote for a Social Democrat candidate in that context. Are you running candidates just to build name recognition ahead of a general election whenever it comes?
No, like, it's our first time contesting all three constituencies in Europe, and that's a really exciting time for the party as well. It was the first time that everyone could vote Social Democrats, for example, in the country. And we know at European elections, like, there's incumbents and there's sitting TDs and there's a lot of big names and the constituencies are enormous. And we chose candidates that we thought had experience and knowledge and expertise that would be really good for the job. And I think, you know, because it's our first time contesting, obviously we're not aligned with the European Party, but I think that actually what people do know with the Social Democrats is where they stand and what we stand for. And we're always very clear about that. And I think that has played out, that, you know, that people support that and they like to know what they are. They don't like to be plumossed. And look, I'm really proud of the three European election campaigns. Our three candidates, I think, did an incredible job when you consider that context and our first time contesting them. So it's all about, as well, as you know, kind of getting our message out there, explaining to people what we stand for. And we don't equivocate on a lot of issues. Okay. And I hope that will stand to us going forward.
Well, listen, you'll know that this notion of the merger with Labour is back on the table. And you see it here. And I'm just looking at the table, the levels of support in this election so far. Labour at 5.3 and yourselves at 3.5. And it does seem like a very obvious solution for that traditional left vote, that you would have a very powerful position. You'd be in a very powerful position ahead of the next election if you could combine and offer people that choice as a strong alternative.
I have to say, no, I didn't know it was back on the table.
Oh, we had a great chat here on the radio last night about it. It went on for a long time, Fergus Finlay saying, I don't know why it hasn't happened. I've been advocating for it from the start. And you can see there by the numbers, you combine those figures and you do have a very strong voice.
But sorry, yeah, I was in County Centre last night, so I didn't hear the discussion on the radio, but as far as I'm concerned, I didn't know that really it was ever on the table, because it would take the two parties wanting to do that. And to be honest, Claire, I don't see it in that way. I don't think voters are that kind of, I don't know what the word is. It's more complex for people than, oh, that's a centre-left vote. Like, that's not how people feel about Social Democrats. When I decided to go into politics only 5 years ago, it wouldn't have occurred to me for a second to join any other party. You know, when I looked at the history, the principles, the values, the culture within a party, all of those things drew me to the Social Democrats. I don't see them as the same in the same way
so
that you're describing.
It's not happening on your watch anyway, is what you're saying.
we're so focused on building the party at the moment, and like I think we have the biggest percentage increase of any party in these local elections. So to be part of a growing movement and one that's building, one that's positive, progressive and pragmatic, I think that that is our focus at the moment.
Okay. We'll leave it there for now. Holly Kearns there, leader of the Social Democrats. Now, I want to have a word with Michelle Marr of See Her Elected, who's on the line. This is a community initiative supporting women in rural constituencies into politics. Michelle, thanks for taking our call. We've had a record number of women candidates running in these local elections. Has it translated into more council seats now being taken by women?
I don't think we're looking at materially more women taking up council seats. A lot of those women who are running were first-time candidates, and they generated a very solid vote in the high hundreds and over 1,000, but some of them have missed out on that last seat. And I think that the fact that we aren't this morning looking at our councils, especially in rural Ireland, being made up of more women, is really evidence of how hard it is to break through. There's an ingrained, sort of a deeply embedded loyalty to incumbent councillors in rural Ireland. And in rural Ireland, those incumbent councillors are men.
And that is the roadblock, do you think, the incumbents?
I just think there's just an entrenched way of voting in rural Ireland where we're very loyal to the councillors, and the fact that a lot of those councillors are men has meant it's been really, really difficult for women to break through.
What would change that, Michelle?
Yeah, well, I think there were voting patterns, I suppose, that had nothing to do with it that happened in this election that influenced the number of women. I mean, Sinn Féin ran 45% of their candidates were women, and the Greens had 51%. So I suppose if we'd been talking this morning about a story, an election story of a Sinn Féin tide like we saw with the Greens in 2019, that would have increased the number of women. Fianna Fáil went into this election with only 24% of their candidates as women. Had they matched, say, Sinn Féin or the Social Democrats, would we have seen a difference? I think we would have. So to answer your question, I suppose, on what needs to be done, I suppose there's kind of various policy levers that can be pulled. Some of them would be internal to parties. I've listened to the discussion there about a general election. So, that usually means that a lot of councillors will become TDs, leaving co-options. So maybe some kind of a commitment from parties to look at who they're putting into those seats, those co-opted seats. Mm-hmm. Quotas, again, definitely worth considering, Claire. It would place more women in positions where there's a potential for a seat. Maybe even something more radical, like looking at, term limits for county councillors. But I suppose today isn't kind of a day for, we must have A, B, C in place immediately. It's a day really to recognise the effort of, I suppose, the almost 680 women who did their best to alter the gender balances in councils.
Okay.
And, in doing so, they've established a good foundation to build on.
Michelle Marr of See Her Elected, thank you very much for joining us. Some interesting suggestions there, Teresa, from Michelle on co-opting women once people become elected to the Dáil, quotas as well, and also term limits for incumbents.
I mean, definitely in the last term, there were a few additional co-options of women, so the balance actually improved over the life cycle of the last round of local elections. But the really effective tool is quotas, and we saw it work in the National Parliament. And there's quite a lot of support for gender quotas as well. I mean, the RTE exit poll, I think it was in 2016, did some questions on that, and we've done some subsequently. And generally speaking, the public actually support it as an action. The stumbling block always at local election level is that there aren't financial penalties that you can use easily. So you would have to start funding political parties at local level in some way. There's no point bringing in quotas unless you can guarantee that they're going to be implemented. And that means money in some way. You get some if you meet the quota, and you lose some if you don't. And so that's the kind of critical stumbling block in terms of bringing them in. The European Parliament actually usually gives us a much better gender balance. It's too early to talk about it now because there are so many seats up in the air. But in general, we do a little bit better in terms of gender balance at the European level. And it is worth saying again, the quota will be 40% for the next general election. So it is very serious, and they will be choosing candidates.
All right, quick break, back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.